Hello, guys. Welcome to the Sportscast. January 9th, 2019. I think we're within our fifth episode of 2019. And if you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Periscope, iTunes, and Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/ or search for the Sportscast, we have a Facebook page, and please like us. And you'll see the live stream there as well. And if you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review. It will help us out tremendously. This is our recap number 2 of the national championship. As we conclude the loss of Alabama to Clemson 44-16, one of the most brutal losses in the Nick Saban tenure. I believe he hasn't lost to two touchdowns to any opponent in history for a while. So, anyways, to join us to talk to us about it, Alabama's number one fan, Mr. Justin Riley. Welcome to the Sportscast.
It was all a bad dream. Tell me that's what it was, Santiago. Please tell me that we got one more week and the game's going to be played next Monday.
You know, it kind of feels like it sometimes, but I'd rather have this type of like win than just like a short win by a point or 3 points. I'd rather have a nice blowout. You knew by the third quarter, midway, that you were going to lose this game.
I actually knew in the second quarter, to be honest with you. It was just the way things were transpiring.
Yeah, very much so. So, Justin, you know, obviously, you know, can you tell us, you know, your point of view, your perspective, the recap? I think where it started was that first interception in the first quarter.
Well, I'm just going to come out and say words really can't describe what I saw tonight from Alabama. I've been a Crimson Tide fan since about 11 or 12 years old, and my entire tenure as a fan, growing up, as well as being a student at University of Alabama, even during the tough years where we endured a lot of heartache due to probation, and just a lot of negatives coming our way, and then just up until now, never have I ever experienced anything like that. I don't think I've ever seen the Crimson Tide, and I will say this word, humiliated before. And everything you brought up before you talked to me just was another knife in the heart, man. It's just so hard to hear this and to take it all in and to try to process it. But I'm gonna be the big man here first and foremost before I focus on Alabama and, you know, what we did or did not do. I'm gonna give Clemson all the credit and praise for just a phenomenal performance, for answering the bell. Incredible team, incredible coaching staff, incredible game plan, from top to bottom. You just can't ask for better. Truly remarkable what Trevor Lawrence as a freshman was able to do. First freshman since, I believe, 1985 to win the national championship. And also, too, it's amazing to see that so many seniors and so many players that could have bolted for the NFL and be making some fat paydays about now decide to come back for this very reason. Amazing job by Dabo Swinney and his family. I will say his family, because he's created that kind of culture there, you know, to keep them all together. And I just got to give praise to them and just what they've done and what they've been able to put together and the culture they've created over these several years. And definitely give praise to Coach Dabo Swinney, man. You couldn't ask for a more godly man as a coach, a mentor, a leader, a guy that is just really cares about pouring into the hearts of his players before making them superstars. And he's got tremendous character, and he's everything right about, you know, coaching and college football as well. And, you know, we don't focus enough on good stories like that. But so anyway, I wanted to get that out first. I don't want to take anything away from Clemson like a lot of people right now are. There seems to be that more focus is being placed on the seemingly demise of the giant Alabama and not so much focusing on Clemson's win. Tua Tagovailoa threw that first interception that, of course, led to a fast pick six. Was alarmed and questioned what he was seeing. He forced a pass that quite honestly should not have gone there. There was too much traffic in that area, a little too much congestion for him to throw it where he threw it. But he threw it anyway, and, of course, the result, what you saw, was bothered by it. But I shrugged it off as just one of those crazy things that happens in the early stages of the game. I didn't think that it would be something that would, you know, seal our fate right away early in the game. And Tua was the kind of guy who can recover from that. And he ended up doing that on the next drive. He led Alabama to a score, deep bomb to Jerry Jeudy. So tied up again. And it kind of looked like it was going to go back and forth. But then negative things started happening to Alabama. Missed extra point. Still don't get how you're a scholarship player as a kicker and you can't make an extra point. 9 missed extra points this season, which is a FBS record this season, FBS record period. 9 missed extra points. That's not supposed to happen, but that's not the single thing. But Alabama just kind of continued to play out of character, and Clemson just imposed their will on them. And Tua threw another costly interception. It looked like it was 10 yards ahead of Jerry Jeudy. Not really sure about that one either, but you had 2 turnovers that led to scores by Clemson. You take away those turnovers, it's still a game. But even at that point, it still won an insurmountable contest. Alabama was able to regroup and march down the field all the way to the half-yard line. And what happens? They get a false start on Willis, number 74, again. Same guy that made 3 of those in a row against Oklahoma the previous week in the playoff game. So obviously he didn't learn his lesson. But it killed the drive, and the result was 3 points instead of 7. And just from there, Alabama just could not get it together. They were just completely discombobulated. They're confused. Several moments when the camera panned over the defense, it looked like a lot of players were lost, didn't really know where they were or what they were supposed to be doing, what their assignment was. You saw a lot of guys looking at the sidelines, look at their teammates, a lot of back and forth going on, throwing their hands in the air, and that's not good. The defensive line that was imposing their will up until this point was relatively silent. Matter of fact, dominated. There was not a sack the entire night. That's the cleanest quarterback jersey I've ever seen, you know, of Trevor Lawrence. It just blew my mind. Not only Tagovailoa's play was not up to par, certainly not characteristic of what he's been able to do, but also Nick Saban had one of his not so great coaching moments. Made several questionable calls throughout the game, and just had one of those moments where there are very few of them. He was out coached. You know, and then make it, especially one of those decisions was a fake field goal, which was just a complete atrocity. You had a third string quarterback executing the play, running the ball with the kicker as the lead blocker. Are you kidding me? Who does that? And it just didn't seem like Alabama could get out of their own way, nor were they trying to. One beef I have, and you may agree with this, Santiago, is the fact we didn't see any of Jalen Hurts in any capacity until garbage time. To me, that's an insult to this man who has been selfless, probably the most selfless player in college football history the entire season. And they don't give him any looks at all. No, I'm not saying yank to and put him in there. Alabama has set packages that feature Jalen at quarterback, wide receiver, as well as running back.
He could have, he could have came in at halftime, you know, do the switch and see what happens, see if Jalen could, you know, change the game a little bit. I mean, I think by halftime it was pretty noticeable Alabama was in trouble.
Right. And you know, even if they didn't do that, the fact that they didn't try to integrate him somehow into the play calling, into the offense, just blew my mind. You know, if anything, it mixes things up. It keeps Clemson's defense honest and can create some confusion for them, because if Jalen's in, they don't know if he's going to run, pass, throw, whatever. But it was never done, and that was something that was really disappointing to me.
But one of the things about this game, which I'm trying to figure out, you know, what was Clemson's strong point? I mean, was it their quarterback? Was it their defense? Was it their secondary, their D-line? Was it, you know, Clemson's wide receivers were that good? I mean, which part of that team was just nonstop?
First and foremost, it has to be Clemson's defense. That defense was just savage, man. I know it's an often overused term in society today, but they were just savages, brother. They set the tone which allowed Trevor Lawrence to explode, allowed the receivers to explode, you know, allowed so much other to benefit for them. Alabama's miscues early on allowed Clemson to take over. There were several mental errors. Alabama wasn't out of the game right away. They still could have taken over, and if they would have gotten their act together, could have possibly ran away with it, but they didn't. They kept on doing things that shoot themselves in the foot. Then they had opportunities to get back into it. They didn't capitalize. And the thing is, against a team like Clemson at the level that which they play, if you don't capitalize and you continue to make those mistakes, they are going to obliterate you.
You think Alabama underestimated Clemson, knowing that they had a way easier schedule and, you know, they haven't faced a tough opponent? You think that was one factor?
You know, I kind of feel like in some ways, yes, because I felt like Alabama seemed more focused against Oklahoma than they did against Clemson. I felt like that killer instinct, that edge, and that something to prove was not there. And I also felt like they were a little cocky. Not all the players were like that, but there are several of them I was watching throughout the game and leading up to the game, even post game, they were being cocky. And you can't be that way, man. Like, just for instance, and during the game, you know, we're down 28-16. Quinnen Williams finally gets a play. I almost forgot he was in the game, and he's sitting there showboating. And I'm looking at the scoreboard. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Sit down. And then even after the post game, some people were interviewing him. I don't know if it was immediately after or the next day. And he's saying that basically discrediting Clemson and saying that their offense was easy to defend, and the only reason they did what they did was because of mental errors by Alabama. Are you kidding me, dude? You just got waxed. You know, I love my Crimson Tide, but I can't tolerate that. That's stupid.
Alabama scored.
He got dominated, and I didn't see not one sack from him. I didn't see a sack from anybody. So, and they didn't much stop anybody. Defense was lost and confused the whole night. And so you tell me, based on what I just said, that was easy to defend against? Man.
Alabama scored no points in the second half. They only scored a touchdown in the first quarter. I mean, this team was obliterated. It wasn't even close.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, man, this is just something you don't see from Alabama. It's definitely something during the Saban era. This is completely out of characteristic for them. And again, I go back, Clemson was phenomenal. I'm not taking anything away from them at all.
You think that first interception really set the tone of the game?
I don't think it really set the tone. I think it was an exclamation point and let us know that, you know, Clemson is for real and they're not going to roll over despite what all the experts were saying and how everybody pretty much was writing them off. I think that they were just letting us know, hey, we're here. You know, we're not going to roll over. This, we came to play.
Now, with this situation, these plays, now, like, the whole debate comes back into play. Did Tua did not live up to the hype? Did he not? I mean, was he pressured? I mean, he couldn't deal with the pressure. Do you think a lot of it was that he was not able to handle it?
Well, dang, dude, I don't think anybody could have handled that pressure. Every time he got the ball, somebody was in the backfield. It's like the linemen were like saying, "Right this way, sir." Well, yeah, he was pressured, man. He was running for his life. But to discredit him, you know, I want people to quit with this and drawing up all these negative stats about him when he goes against seemingly greater opponents, greater defenses. You know, for a lot of those games, like I've mentioned before, he was playing hurt. He was healthy in this game, and he had a bad day. But that doesn't mean that he's not what everybody thinks he is. You know, but I think a lot of this also has to do with the fact that the media, the sports media, have created this image of Tua Tagovailoa, of this larger-than-life college football player, this worthy of being on college football's Mount Rushmore right away, and then comparing him to NFL quarterbacks and saying that he's going to be a number one pick and stuff like that. I think that set an unfair precedent for him to live up to. We got to remember that this is his first full year as a starter. He's young, and he does have a lot of negatives. Like you said, I will admit to the fact that when he does get pressured, he does tend to make bad decisions. When he doesn't have his primary target open, he will try to force things that aren't necessarily there. But you know what? That's called being young. He's a young quarterback. Now, if he's still doing this as a junior or senior, yeah, then you might want to say, okay, this guy might not be up to snuff. But to say that right now is preposterous. And I'll tell you this right now, nobody's a harder critic on Tua Tagovailoa than himself. And I guarantee you, nobody's going to work harder than Tua Tagovailoa to correct those mistakes and make them into strengths in the offseason than Tua Tagovailoa.
What do you think about the running game? Najee Harris, Joshua Jacobs, how do you think they did?
Well, that's about the one of the few things that went right. Well, the thing is, passing was there, running was there, execution just wasn't there, and mental errors stopped promising drives. You know, Alabama was able to run the ball very effectively. Najee Harris was very productive. Josh Jacobs was productive. Definitely showed us that he could quite possibly be a first-round draft pick. There were a few of those times he was carrying the ball that he executed some sick moves that just broke some ankles and other body parts possibly from some defenders. But, yeah, they were able to run the ball very effectively.
It's just the conversions to touchdowns wasn't good, and the receiving end. I think Clemson secondary really did a good job against these dangerous wide receivers. I think they were able to cut it. I mean, if Jalen would have came in and show his running game, do you think it would have been a little bit different?
Well, quite possibly. How much different, we don't know. But with Jalen Hurts, you're adding an extra dimension to that offense. You add running.
Which, know, he's improved his passing.
Absolutely.
Since last season.
He's improved his passing game. And he would, you know, if he comes in, you know, he's the question mark to that defense. Well, is he going to throw or is he going to run? What's he going to do? So it's going to make that defense kind of take a step back and think and perhaps overthink. And allow opportunity for Alabama to possibly do more.
Yeah, that's one of the things that would definitely be wondering, hypotheticals and everything. But We're definitely going to see what's going to happen next season. A lot of the players from Clemson, like Trevor Lawrence, is coming back. Do you think Trevor Lawrence is the best quarterback in college football right now?
I think a season as a whole, I wouldn't say he's the best quarterback season as a whole. I think late season, he probably was the best quarterback late season. But, you know, cumulative, I wouldn't necessarily give that. I definitely got to, you know, give props to Kyler Murray, our Heisman Trophy winner, Dwayne Haskins. But Trevor Lawrence got better and better and better as the season progressed. And, you know, from a intangibles mechanics standpoint, yeah, absolutely phenomenal. Kid is doing things that seasoned veterans do who are looking towards going to the NFL draft.
You think he's better than Watson, Deshaun Watson?
Man, like I said before, when you asked me that question in a previous cast, I'm not going to say that right now. I think he's done some great things. I think he's done some really great things so far. But Deshaun Watson is a different player, different time in his life. I think that Trevor Lawrence has the potential to possibly be there. But I think that it's too early to start doing that. Kind of like people with Tua Tagovailoa crowning him the Messiah of college football. I don't put that on just yet.
What do you think Alabama should do for next year? What type of changes should they do? Obviously, we know that Tua is coming back next season. What changes do you think needs to be added, and what things, you know, could be improved on?
Get a kicker.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, I don't want to have any more excuses. The University of Alabama has competed for a national championship for over a decade. They can get their pick of 4 and 5 stars, but there has been the absence of a kicker. We've had an amazing punter. Where is the kicker? I'm not going to sit back. And I think a lot of Alabama fans will agree with me. We're not going to sit back and have a dismal kicking game again. This needs to be addressed. No more missing extra points. You know, we need somebody that is going to win a game late. It's going to be a certifiable make, you know? We've got to address that, and we signed the number one kicker out of high school this year. You know, that he's great in high school. Will that translate to college level? That has yet to be seen, but there is that hope that, you know, we did make the effort to go out there and try to work on correct this position problem. The other thing is Alabama has got to improve in the secondary. This season, I believe a lot of people agree with me as well that the weak link was the secondary. Deontay Thompson was a phenomenal safety, but he's one man and he could not cover the entire field as much as he tried on several occasions. But there was a weakness at corner, and it was very, very apparent. And you saw in this game, man, that Clemson's receivers, Justin Ross, T. Higgins, and name whoever else, just made them look like kids. And a lot of that has to do with youth. We did have youth at corner, and we had youth at the other safety position. And, of course, having the loss of Trayvon Diggs greatly hurt things. But Alabama's really going to have to work on that. You know, Savion Smith was new, and I get an update on his injury that he suffered late in the game against Clemson when he fell down rather awkwardly when Ross scorched them for that long touchdown. Savion Smith needs to improve. You know, Xavier McKinney needs to continue to get better. It's just young secondary. Surtain has got to work, get better.
Yeah,
you know, these are all young guys. I mean, I give them, you know, I don't give them a benefit of the doubt just because of the youth factor, but I have to be very, very clear. Secondary has got to get better. And where Alabama is going to have to do some replacing as well, because that defensive line that was so good, they're all headed to the NFL, so we're going to have new faces up front. We just still don't know the status of Trayvon Diggs, if he's going to leave early or he's going to come
back. He's actually going to come back. It was late breaking news last hour, so he'll be back.
Okay, my week just got better. Terrell Lewis will be back next season. He is our star linebacker that had an ACL problem. He missed the entire season. And he'll be ready to go next season. Hopefully no more injuries and he's able to play at his fullest capacity, because when healthy, this kid could be a first-round draft pick. So you'll have some leaders in the defense coming back. We're going to have new faces up front in the offensive line. Pierce Bakker is going to be gone. He's one player of note. Jonah Williams is going to be gone. Irv Smith Jr. at tight end will be going to NFL. Josh Jagus more than likely will probably forego his senior season and declare for the draft. Like I said, I project him to possibly be a first or second round pick. His stock has improved dramatically during the later parts of the season. Of course, Damian Harris graduates, but he'll also be headed to the NFL as well. But Tua Tagovailoa and the receivers will all be back. So that definitely gives us some firepower offensively going into next season.
Now, obviously, we've heard today, and I think it's probably very official by now, that Jalen Hurts will be in the transfer portal. What are your thoughts, and where do you think he should go?
Well, first and foremost, I got to say, Jalen Hurts, I, as an Alabama fan and the entire Alabama nation, greatly appreciate everything that you've done. Tremendous player, one of the best stories of college football this season, one of the best displays of selflessness and character and just the team. You know, the team concept was flashing like an incredible billboard constantly in this guy. This guy has tremendous heart. And, you know, we all saw that he would possibly leave. And, you know, I wish him well. And I'm going to be cheering hard for him wherever he goes. And where it's going to be, don't really know. You know, there's a couple of things that have popped into mind.
There's a few rumors right now. It's TCU and Houston. Those are the top two I've heard lately.
Yeah, I could possibly see both of those teams just based on the standpoint. You know, Jalen is from Texas and the Houston area, so I think that might be one of the contributing factors for his decision making.
Thank you.
To be quite honest, I don't see him going to Houston because that's not a Power Five school. I could see him possibly going to TCU before he did that. But my guess is he'll probably go to a team that has better talent around him. That's going to allow him to continue to excel, as well as a better coaching staff to further develop him.
Yeah, and keep in mind, guys, he only has, one season to play for his graduate season?
Yes, he does.
So according to 247 Sports, here are the top options or predictions. They think TCU, they got Auburn as well, Maryland, which Lockley will be the new coach, Miami Hurricanes, that should be interesting, Houston Cougars, as we spoke about, Arkansas Razorbacks, Florida Gators, Ryan Crystal might be excited, the FSU, which you'd think FSU is not a good spot. for him. Tennessee Volunteers. Florida Atlantic, Lane Kiffin. Arizona Wildcats. And that is all they have in the list. So from that list,
right,
it seems like, you know, Auburn would be interesting, but that's a rival school. I don't really think he would go there, but, you know, we've been surprised before. The Hurricanes, that would be a good choice.
As far as Auburn goes, that system will benefit his skills. However, I don't see him going to our rival, but two, I think Auburn's all but made it clear that Nix is their guy, so I don't foresee Jalen going there. Florida, out of anybody in the SEC, I could see him going there because that system would greatly work well with him, especially with Dan Mullen, and especially how he's able to develop players. That type of offense fits his skill set very well. But then again, you run into the question of Felipe Franks. Are they going to sit him in favor of Jalen? So there will be some controversy there, and Jalen certainly is going to sit through another controversy and possibly be on a bench for an entire season. So
yeah.
I think that kind of may rule out Florida.
How about FSU? You were saying FSU would not be a good spot. Why do you say that?
Because it's a complete train wreck. You know, they're reeling, and they're out. I don't have confidence in Taggart. I don't have confidence in his abilities to develop players because he had a ton of talent on that team. And shame on him to the greatest degree for the season that they have with all that talent he had. So, no, I don't want Jalen Hurts going to that.
So, pretty much what Jalen Hurts is probably saying, look, pretty much what he's saying that the NFL scouts has probably informed him, hey, you would not be good enough for the NFL, or you'll be, you know, picked in lower rounds. Is that what he's probably getting the message from the scouts, do you think?
Well, it could possibly be a factor. Of course, you know, he hadn't really talked about anything up until this point as far as, you know, transferring, getting graded by the NFL, anything like that, just because he wanted the focus to be on the task at hand, and that was, you know, winning a national championship. So nothing's really come out. Maybe this also was a personal thing. Maybe he feels like he's not quite ready. Maybe he feels like he needs to continue to develop a little bit more. But he could have possibly put his name in the hat for some people to do some grading on him, and based on the feedback, he may have decided to come back. We don't really know because, you know, he hadn't talked about it. But that it probably will later on. But, you know, we really don't know what his decision. So
if you had to name your top three schools and tell Jalen or had to consult, hey, man, this is your top three schools that I approve, what would they be?
Well, the only non-Power 5 school I could see him going to would be Florida Atlantic, and that's just because he's worked with Lane Kiffin. Other than that, I don't see him going to another non-Power 5 school. I definitely don't see him going to Arizona. I don't have full trust in Sumlin and his ability to develop players at all, and I just don't think that would be a good situation from him. I could feel comfortable with him going to Maryland just because he would be under Locksley and he would continue to work and develop with him. And you got to admit that under Locksley's tutelage with Dan Enos this year, he has grown tremendously. So I would feel comfortable going, you know, with him going with Locksley from that standpoint, just because of what I've seen he's been able to do with Jalen.
Yeah, Locksley would be good. He'll be in the ACC going up at Clemson. You know, there's not really a good number two in the ACC, as we saw Kentucky, you know, come to the rise. But Maryland wouldn't be that bad. It'd be right in the middle of the road type of team.
I think it's a better situation than Miami right now. I think Miami is a mess right now.
They're cleaning
up. We don't know just how bad it is. there's a reason why Mark Richt ran for the hills.
No, it's true. In his 50s. It's too early to retire. I mean, we don't know of any health issue he had.
There's a lot more beyond the surface than we know about. And I'm not trying to be one of those instigators or one of those people trying to create drama. There's obviously some stuff there that's negative for that to happen. I mean, he was just in year three. And for him to bail that quick, especially after having such a great season the previous season, something ain't good. And it appears toxicity is probably the reason.
Back to cleaning up or, you know, shaping things for next year for Alabama. Do you think Nick Saban has to clean up the coaching staff a little bit?
Quite possibly. Of course, he's going to have to replace Locksley, and of course, that's the biggest thing about Alabama, man. It's a constant carousel of coaches there. Yeah. It's a testament of the success they've had. Which has allowed these coaches to rise to higher levels. That's also one of the downsides is because you eliminate consistency. Whereas Clemson, they've had the same staff, I dare say, the entire time that Dabo's been there. And that's one of the biggest strengths they have, man, that they've been able to hang on to all those guys, like especially Venables. You know, Venables probably could have been given a head coach position somewhere by now. But he chose to stay at Clemson.
He believes in the team, believes in the organization.
Absolutely. Now, I believe from a defensive standpoint, there's got to be some changes. I'm not saying necessarily that you fire Lapoy, but there's some things defensively this year that was very noticeable and has got to be corrected right away because this defense was not as good as Alabama teams typically are.
Yeah, it's quite the opposite this year. Yeah, I mean their offense was way better, which is unusual for a Nick Saban team.
Well, the offense is way better, but there just wasn't a whole lot of progression from the defense. I think up front and linebackers, they were fine. They were really good, but in the secondary, there really wasn't a progression. And that's surprising to me, and it's kind of drawn a little bit of concern.
Well, there you have it. The defense needs improvement. And, I've been hearing rumors from the rumor mill from Tuscaloosa that part of the ownership is the staff, the coaching staff. So we'll see if Nick Saban cleans house. I'm sure he knows the right people to get in it, have more consistency. Back to Dabo. How do you think he did this season?
Man, phenomenal, brother. I mean, what this guy has been able to accomplish is something that we're going to be talking about for a long time. And he's going to further make a case for himself to be a legend in the game of coaching. He gets the best out of his players. And I think that has a lot to do with how he pours into them and he pours into their hearts. I mean, he touched on that he's more concerned about their hearts and building them from that standpoint. And then based on what he's doing in these young men's lives, and he says, you know, quite honestly, says, quote, "I do it to further the kingdom of God." And I think because of that, those players are able to go to a whole nother level. He gets the best out of his players, man. He's a great mentor. He's a great leader. His formula works. And it's going to continue to work more and more. And, and he dealt with some adversity this year. But he was able to shake that off and got to the top of the mountain.
Are we entering the Dabo Sweeney era?
Quite possibly, but I don't think Alabama's done. So to say that it's no longer the Alabama era would be a mistake. I still think it's going to be the era of Nick Saban, of Dabo Sweeney. It's going to be the continued era of Georgia, and we'll wait to see if there's going to be another one to that. I think these programs are still very strong. I don't think that Saban's going to start fading now, and I think that's what a lot of people are wishing and hoping.
For the past couple of years, I even said it, and I was wrong. You can't underestimate Nick Saban. You know, you think his final thing to do before, you know, his end of his career, which could be, you know, years from now, is to break Bear Bryant's record for six championships.
I think for him personally, I don't think that that's something he necessarily is focusing on. But I think that from his legacy is cemented. But
yeah,
I think that it's just something there already is at Alabama. But I think that he has to eclipse this man. There has to be that be all end all. Legendary coach like the Bear, you know, and I think that it's important that Saban does that. I think it's big for college football.
Nick Saban is a college football legend. I think he'll stay in college football. I don't think he'll go professional NFL. I think he's tried that. He saw the landscape. It's just not for him. College football is his setting, is his terrain. And back to Clemson. Now, Clemson's number six in the recruiting ranking, so it's quite interesting what they've done. You know, obviously ranked lower. I mean, Georgia's number two, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, LSU, then Clemson. But you know, it's just choosing the right players. But Alabama's still number one in the ranking. So, and they're loaded up next year, I believe, on defensive back. They're pretty good, I've heard. So maybe their defense might improve a bit next year. And anyways. Anything else? I know they did game predictions on Monday, but anything else before we hit like the next segment?
No, man. I think that's all I got right now. I already gave my spin on the NFL, so yeah.
I believe
I've gotten all of my tangent out.
Yeah.
And I'm quite proud of myself that I wasn't using cuss words or anything like that.
We had to give you a day,
to me.
You know, just to decompress the loss. But which loss was worse, on Monday night or that Auburn loss a couple years ago?
Monday night, absolutely, man. You know, a lot of Alabama fans will base the success of their season on whether or not they beat Auburn. You know what? I'm not going to base the success of my team on beating my rival. You know, I want to win all the games. You know,
you got to in college football.
I think it's worse. This loss hurts worse because it's on the national stage. It's for everything. It's the national title game.
Yeah,
and you know, it's not just the fact that we lost. It's the way we lost. That we were just completely obliterated. And that really just hurts deep. Now, had it been one of the epic battles that we are accustomed to with Alabama versus Clemson, and Clemson wins one at the end like they did a few years ago with Watson, that's different, man. You know, that's easier to take. But in this fashion, man, it's just a lot more devastating.
It is. But, I mean, I'd rather be blown out than lose by a touchdown or by a score. I still say it.
Well, I respect your opinion. I just think that it's a national championship game, man. You got there, and you got to show up. And, you know, but, again, a testament of just how incredible Clemson is.
Either way, loss is a loss. In other college news, Cliff Kingsbury got hired by the Arizona Cardinals on Monday. He was blocked by USC, but then they let him have those interviews. You think Cliff will be a good fit for the Cardinals?
No.
Oh, okay.
I in all seriousness, like I said in a previous cast, when you asked me this question, I don't believe he's ready for that position. I believe, like I said, that he needs to get under the tutelage of a great coach. You know, a person that's considered one of the best in the game and maybe even a legend, to really teach him, to really mold him. And after he's had time doing that, you know, then let him move to being a head coach again. Give him another shot. Do I think he's talented? Well, absolutely. I think he's very talented, you know. But I don't think that you cut your teeth on the NFL with one of the worst organizations in the NFL.
Oof, you said it yourself after firing a coach after a year. So,
well, the thing is, Arizona is a debacle right now.
Right.
And, you know, and to get your first NFL gig and you're assigned the task of resurrecting an awful team.
Wow.
That's a lot, you know, because you're having to get rid of bad players. You're having to get rid of the toxicity in the locker room. You know, then you're having to overcome the negatives in the front office and possibly getting them out of your way. And then, too, like you just mentioned, man, Arizona fired a coach after just 1 year. So you got this incredible amount of pressure in several areas I just named, and I just don't think that's where you want to start your NFL career.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a change for him. He was really eager, you know, to coach in the NFL, but we'll see what happens with the young Josh Rosen. Maybe things will be quite different at Arizona. Today, a few positions were filled in the NFL. Please tell me which one was the best hire. The Buccaneers hired Bruce Arians. Packers hired Matt LaFleur. Cardinals hired, of course, Cliff Kingsbury. The Browns hired Freddie Kitchens. And the Broncos hired Vic Fangio. Which of those teams had the best hire of the week?
I think Tampa. I think Bruce Arians is a great coach. He's been in the game for a long time, and he's had successes. I like him more than anybody. He's a well-known name. But in the NFL, he also was well known as assistant in college as well. I think that he's the better one. Some of those decisions that were made, I just kind of scratched my head like, huh?
And keep in mind, Arians coached Alabama in 1997, if you don't remember.
Sure. I do remember when that happened. Speaking of Alabama, former Alabama quarterback Freddie Kitchens is now the head coach of the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
Did not see that coming. I didn't even know that he was actually in the running. Didn't even know he was offensive coordinator there.
I heard, but he was surprised himself.
Yeah, well, he probably was. But Kitchens has really quietly been a really good coordinator for years, and a great assistant for years, and has done a lot of good things in a lot of places he's been. And I'm glad that he's been given the opportunity. Do I think he needs to take on Cleveland? I don't know. To be honest with you, to get Cleveland where they need to be, they really need a strong name, a strong coach, you know, a legend, like I said earlier,
like
to really do that. Yeah, you're not going to get him. But you also need that kind of coach to put up with Baker Mayfield and to rein him in.
I got to be honest with you. That Browns team looks sexy.
Well, they do, but it's all about the leadership from the top. They've got to have the right leadership. It could be Freddie Kitchens. I don't know. I would love to see him succeed.
It is interesting. Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator for the Patriots, only picked two interviews to do, one with the Packers and one with the Browns. I don't know what happened with the Browns. Maybe he said, look, I can interview guys, but I'm not sure if I can escape New England.
I'll be honest with you, I think he needs to stay put where he is, because the times that he has actually been a head coach, he really hasn't shown me anything.
I heard, I was doing some reading, and he has not done well as a head coach.
And while he continues to be one of the most talked about names that head coach positions become available, it is a mystery to me. I think he is a phenomenal assistant. I think he's a good coordinator, and he's just one of those guys where that's their niche, that's their thing,
Yeah.
And they're never going to translate it over to being a head coach.
Well, anyways, let's go on to game predictions. You did predict a few games on Monday, but you might have changed your mind after 2 days. Ready?
May have after I just got completely obliterated Monday, but yeah, sure.
Colts at the Chiefs.
I'm still sticking to my guns on this one. I think that the Colts are going to win, and Colts are playing good ball right now. Andrew Luck has that playoff experience that you like and you want to see going in, whereas Kansas City with Mahomes and company and a really bad defense leaves a lot to be desired. And I just keep going back to the experience factor, man. Andrew Luck's got it, and I think he's going to do it.
Cowboys at the Rams.
I think on paper the Rams should win this game, but I really love how Dallas is playing as of late. Still going to hold to my guns there. I feel like Dallas is going to win that one, especially with the defense playing as well as they are, and Zeke, Amari, and Dak playing at a good level.
The big three. Chargers at the Patriots.
My gut wants to tell me to go with the Chargers. Oh, just because they're playing very well.
Which Tyler and chose the Chargers too, so
they're playing very well. And then too, you got to ask the question: just how many more opportunities does Philip Rivers have of getting to the Super Bowl? Man, he's getting older.
He's getting up there in age.
Yeah, he's at the close to the end of his career. So you got to ask, you know, how much longer is he going to have the opportunity to do this? And I know they've got a decent team. I'm not sure if they quite have what it takes to beat the Patriots. Yeah, the Patriots are not the typical Patriots team that we're accustomed to, but they're still the Patriots, and they're still the king when it comes to the playoffs, and they know how to turn it on and get the best out of whatever players they have come playoff time. So until someone knocks them off the mountain, the Patriots are going to be the ones to pick.
And finally, the last game, the Eagles at the Saints, which they're saying this might be the biggest game of the weekend.
Yeah, I definitely hold true to that statement. I think it's going to be the best game to watch. I think that that the Eagles are playing their best ball with Nick Foles, and I still am going to hold to my claim that is Nick Foles' team, not Carson Wentz's team. And because he's calling the shots, they are in a better position to win, and they're going to keep it very competitive. And it's going to be a very close affair, but I think that New Orleans has more, and they're playing with a chip on their shoulder, and they're playing to determine, and you got a very determined Drew Brees right now, man, and that's a very dangerous thing. So I got to go with New Orleans.
The Carper Wright can – oh, New Orleans. Okay, I thought you were going to say Philly. Okay, New Orleans continue. They're the favorite to win the whole thing, by the way. So we'll see what happens. Anyways, before we go, any final words for Alabama to close out the season? Obviously, Willie will be bringing up some any recruits, any prospects coming in, or any coaching changes. But any final words to end out this amazing Alabama season, to be honest? I mean, yes, they ended it pretty badly, but they had a good run.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, you can't let this define you, Alabama. This is something that you can't let it be your label or your banner, because it's not. You know, they've had one of the best seasons in the history of the school, and yes, there was a lot of negatives on defense that I brought up, but they're still able to do some pretty amazing things, and they're going to get better. And for anyone to sit there and mistake this for the death of Alabama, then I feel sorry for what's going to happen to you, because I don't see them going down, man.
No, no.
They're going to take it. Whenever Alabama has suffered a defeat of any kind, they take that into the off season, and they make that their focus point the entire off season in the summer training, fall workouts and all through that next season. And when that usually happens, that Alabama team bounces back. And they do some things that are very characteristic of Alabama. And I mean, what I mean by that, they win a title. So they just got to carry this and don't let all the distractions and the media and the negativity enter in. You know, you can't do that. You know, that you mentioned about this, about possibly cleaning house and coaches, man. Don't let that filter into the Alabama camp. You know, get your staff together, get the team, the family together, and just hold strong and focus on you and ignore the external, which is something that Nick Saban preaches on greatly. You know, he's gonna get it figured out. He's the best coach in college football right now, and definitely this era of college football for a reason, and he's gonna be able to rein it in. The questions are, you know, while Alabama to build or replace the key players we're losing at key positions, and will Alabama be able to have that kicker? Will Alabama be able to improve that secondary? And I will go ahead and go on the record and say, and you will see a better and more improved Tua Tagovailoa next season, and all these things that people are nitpicking on him about. These flaws everybody keeps continuing to poke at and prod at, they're going to be gone.
There you have it, Justin Riley. Preparedness for next season starts today. Not a few days. It starts today. So we'll see some changes going on. Get ready, you know, mentally. Get the new the new prospects in the game, in the practice field, and get things going. Prepare for next season because Alabama's going to be strong. I mean, they're definitely contenders. And it's going to be an exciting one. Justin, how can people reach you to talk to you about Alabama during the offseason?
Well, you can talk to me about that, but you can also talk about you know, some training opportunities. It is that time of the year where everybody's trying to make the resolutions and trying to better themselves. And I can definitely help with that. You can reach me 121 training, number 12, one spelled out training at gmail.com. You can find me on Facebook, /121training, and Twitter, as well as Instagram, @121training.
Justin Riley, the guy for Alabama, our Alabama correspondent. He'll be with us through the NFL season. He'll also be watching some NBA that he's promised me, and college basketball, of course. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, on the SportsCast, also on YouTube, the SportsCast 1, and also on Twitter, the SportsCast 1. Should be exciting. NFL divisional playoffs are this weekend, so get ready for that. And we'll talk recruitment throughout the offseason, NBA, of course, and maybe some LeBron James, right?
Why not? That's all we hear about.
Anyways, Justin Riley, I appreciate you coming on to the SportsCast.
I appreciate you, man. I've had a great time this football season, brother.
And one more time, Roll Tide.
Roll Tide, sir.